Most of you in here who are regulars know that I take an annual retreat for about 2 weeks in December up at the Forest Refuge Center in Barre, Massachusetts. And I did that again this year. And it's just a beautiful place. It's designed for only about 25 people at a time. And it's set in the middle of these long old country roads and hills and farms. And in the winter, especially with all the snow around it, it can just be exceptionally pin drop quiet. And so it's a wonderful place to practice, kind of an ideal place to practice. And they make it that way. And yet, almost every time, about a week or so of being in complete silence, mostly in a small room by myself with just a simple bed and kind of a small desk in it, you know, there are times when I start to kind of just sit there and look around and say, what is it exactly that I'm doing here? What am I doing? You know? Anybody else have that question sometimes when you're in sitting practice? Maybe even tonight? Yeah. So actually the teaching suggests this is a really important question and that we should ask ourselves this question often, essentially to remind ourselves of our intention and maybe even to renew our aspiration, those two things, right? So for instance, whenever you're sitting down to practice, you might just take a moment to consider why. Why exactly am I practicing? Or what am I looking for? Right? Or even who am I practicing for? You ever thought about that one? Who am I practicing for? So in the Pali Canon, the Buddha offers us a sutta or teaching on these questions. In the Tavalata or Firebrand Sutra, and I'm going to explore that one a little one tonight. And I think as many of you who are regulars may have noticed, I've been diving more and more into the Buddhist suttas for many reasons. One is that I've always been intrigued by story and metaphor and imagery and how stories can teach us in ways that are relatable and therefore memorable. We remember it if it's a story. Isn't that true that we've heard? And so I think stories can touch us in just a deeper part of us, often like poetry does, in that it can invoke many different layering. You know, there's many different layers to a story. I've also been interested in learning more directly from the teachings rather than relying so much on what my own teachers have taught me or, you know, all the many books that I've read over the past three decades about the teaching, right? I want to go directly to the source, you know. And so for the past few years, I've been getting more and more interested in reading all the suttas myself and kind of imagining that I'm sitting there right in the circle of the Buddha Sangha 2,600 years ago and hearing the words directly. And when I can imagine that I'm hearing these words directly, I can imagine that I'm learning more directly and then trying to become even more discerning about the teachings through my own understanding and my own practice, which goes back to a talk I gave a couple of weeks ago about the importance of discovering our own truth through the teachings, not relying so much on outside sources, not even the Buddha himself, right? And I think this is one of the ways that I'm attempting to do this. So tonight, I'm going to read you directly from this sutta and then offer you some thoughts about it, but I want you to hear it directly. And before I read it, I want you to keep in mind that in different translations, the word benefit in the sutta sometimes is also heard as profit or welfare. Okay, so just remember that. And I've also changed the gender of this to include everyone. And I'm confident that today the Buddha would agree with this if he were alive today, to change the gender. And it starts out as most of the suttas do with the Buddha saying, monks. Monks. Yes, Lord, they reply. And the Buddha says, monks, these four persons are found existing in the world. What for? One who is bent neither on their own benefit nor on the benefit of another. one who is bent on another's benefit, but not their own. One who is bent on their own benefit, but not another's. And one who is bent on the benefit both of themselves and of another. Just as monks a firebrand from a funeral pyre, blazing at both ends and in the middle smeared with dung, serves no purpose as fuel in village or as timber in forest. Using such a figure do I speak of this person who is bent neither on their own benefit nor on another's. Then, monks, this person who is bent on another's benefit, but not their own, is the more excellent and exalted of these two persons. Again, monks, this person who is bent on their own benefit, not another's, is the more excellent and exalted of these three persons, whereas one who is bent on the benefit both of self and of another is of these four persons chief and best, topmost, highest, and supreme. Just as, monks, from a cow comes milk, from milk cream, from cream butter, from butter ghee, from ghee to the skimmings of ghee, and that is reckoned the best. Even so, this person who is bent on their own benefit as well as on the benefit of another is of these four persons chief and best, topmost, highest, and supreme. These four persons, monks, are found existing in the world. So I'm going to stop here for a moment and ask you to remember from this sutta the word bent. And what this means is it implies a kind of intention rather than a way of being. Do you see that? So instead of thinking in absolute terms of this person is like this or I am like this, I want you to consider thinking in terms of the intention. The intention, the bent, is like this. So to summarize, in this way the Buddha is talking about four types of intentions. The first is when we really have no intention of developing any understanding of the Dhamma or the teachings. Okay. The second is when our intention is to develop an understanding of the teachings for others, but not for our own benefit. And the third is when our intention is to understand the teachings for our own benefit, but not for others. And the fourth is when our intention is to practice for our own benefit and for the benefit of others. So stay with me. Before I explore these for tonight in one more detail, I really want to suggest that while you listen, you try not to judge yourself as I describe these different intentions. Because the truth is, at different times we all have had these different intentions, which is why it's called a practice. Again, not a perfection. And where we focus, why we focus so much on our aspiration as well as kindness and patience. So keep that in mind. It's an intention. And we can start with the first one. One who is bent neither on their own benefit nor on the benefit of another. And as in many of these suttas, the Buddha employs some dark imagery here as a way to really warn us about this one and also to help us to remember it. So here it is, he describes this intention as, quote, like a cremation firebrand burning on both ends with dung smeared in between, adding that this firebrand cannot be used as firewood in the village nor in the forest. So when we have this intention, this first one, we are essentially burning at both ends because we're not making any attempt at all, any attempt to cool the fires of our own greed or ill will or delusion. And as you might imagine, we are not going to be much help or benefit to anyone, including ourselves, since all of those states of mind ultimately lead to suffering, both for ourselves and others. And the Buddha says this one is the most unrefined of our intentions, and he relates it to the refining of milk into the skimming of ghee, right? So with this one, if you imagine that it's the most unrefined, in its raw state, this milk isn't going to last very long, right? It's going to curdle and sour really quickly. And this is when we're letting our most base, primitive impulses take us over. And we just don't really care. Right? And with this one, you might think of all the different people in your life, or maybe in our world, who have no intention at all of cooling their own aggression or greed or ill will, or maybe their willful ignorance, and how much harm this does cause, not only to themselves, but to everyone around them. Right? Can you think of anybody like that? Just doesn't want to work on themselves at all. And if you think in more global terms, you can just you see how destructive this one can be, for instance, in someone who might have great power, right? And how much harm it can bring. And this has been true throughout history, when instead of an intention to cool our more baser impulses of greed, hatred, ill will, which actually takes more effort to cultivate, right? The intention has been to actually heat up these destructive impulses, to pour even more flames on them, maybe even worship the impulses of greed, ill will, and delusion, maybe even bow to them, right? You can see how this happens sometimes in our world and what comes from that. So in our own lives, we can use the Buddha's warning about this intention to start noticing when we ourselves might be doing this, right? Burning at both ends by fueling our destructive impulses. Like maybe we're being somehow greedy about something and we just don't care what harm it does, right? Can you think about this in your own life in some ways? That you're something you really, really want and you don't care if it hurts you or another person? Or maybe blaming or fueling our negative thoughts about someone, pouring more, you know, flame on our negative thinking. Don't go to a peace rally angry. Is that thought? But it's true, you know, it's true. You can protest with love in your heart because you want change. You love this rather than I oppose that and I hate that. And finally, you might consider how you might be in some way being willfully ignorant about something that's causing yourself or others suffering. Where might you be willfully ignorant? And a very simple example of being willfully ignorant about something is when, for instance, those of us maybe who are white ignore the suffering that's happening all around us for people of color because we think it's not affecting us. And we might believe it's not something we need to get involved in or pay attention to. But in fact, because we are all connected, it is deeply affecting all of us. Deeply affecting all of us. So the second type of intention that the Buddha mentions in the sutta is almost the opposite of this. But it can also, interestingly, cause a lot of harm. Okay, and this one is one who is bent on another's benefit but not on their own. One who is bent on another's benefit, but not on their own. And this one is one I think actually many of us might relate to or struggle with often, since it's very conditioned cultural expectation on many levels for many of us, maybe especially as women sometimes, but also for men. So for instance, many of us may find ourselves constantly giving of ourselves or maybe constantly concerned about others, but we just don't tend to take care of ourselves as well as we take care of everyone else around us. Anybody have this? Wants to admit it? And you might find it interesting or maybe surprising. I found it surprising to know that when choosing between those who practice for the benefit of others but not their own benefit, and those who practice for their own benefit, but not for others, the Buddha prefers the ones who do the practice just for themselves, right? And there's many reasons for this. And I love the way Satyavani, a Buddhist priest in England, writes about this. She writes, "When I think about people I know who are motivated to help others, but who neglect their own practice, the teaching becomes clear to me. What use is an excellent teacher of the Dharma, one who is skilled in encouraging, inspiring, and gladdening his fellow monks or nuns, if they don't put these teachings to use in their own life? How can we be inspired by someone who doesn't practice what they preach? Why would we listen to someone lecture us about the dangers of our compulsions as we watch them glugging away at wine or overeating? Please don't judge me. I do like my Haagen-Dazs. She says, if we leap too quickly to helping others, we are likely to fall into all kinds of traps, thinking we know best, being patronizing, having too high expectations of others, depending on the development of others for our own ego, not having a deep enough understanding of what is helpful in various situations, giving advice when we are not asked for advice, traits that will be familiar to anyone working on their codependency. So, when we either consciously or maybe unconsciously have this intention, we tend to neglect or avoid our own practice of looking within in order to examine and work with our own greed and aggression and delusion by fixating on quote-unquote helping others with maybe our righteous ideas about this, or, you know, which we think is going to help us to feel better, right? When we have this idea of I'm a helper, you know, and it's going to increase my ego and make me feel better by being a helper. The Hindu sage Ramana Maharishi pointed to this teaching by once famously saying, wanting to reform the world without discovering one's true self is like trying to cover the world with leather to avoid the pain of walking on stones and thorns. It is much simpler to wear shoes. Probably all heard that one before, but that's really what it essentially is talking about. So when we have this intention of being, quote, bent on another's benefit but not on our own, we are also forgetting the truth of our interconnection, okay? That it is not my happiness or your happiness or my sorrow or your sorrow. It's our happiness, our sorrow, and these are intricately woven together. So the Australian Aboriginal activist Lila Watson once said this so beautifully. She said, if you have come here to help me, you are wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. So the third intention the Buddha talks about in the sutta is one who is bent on their own benefit but not another's. And then many of us might immediately think about this one. Ah, this is where the selfishness comes in, right? The self-centeredness. But remember, the Buddha considered this intention much more refined than the one who is bent on benefiting others but not on themselves. And if we're honest, I think this is really where many of us enter the practice, when we find ourselves desperately wanting the practice for ourselves. Right? Anybody come in here because of other people? Anybody? Right? And this is mostly, if we're honest, because we're hurting in some way, and we really want to discover some peace and joy and ease in our lives. Right? I know that this was true for me. I was in my mid-20s when I was first introduced to the practice, and at the very same time, I was also just starting to wake up from another way, which was the delusion and fog of alcoholism, right? And from a childhood that was less than ideal. So I definitely didn't come to the cushion with the intention of becoming a benefit to both myself and others. I was simply there to stop feeling so much pain in my life. I wanted it to stop. And almost all of my own teachers and friends of mine who are teachers that I studied with have confessed the same thing to me. We all say the same thing, as have so many students who have been willing to share this with me. And I'm imagining this is true for many of you, that you came here to just find some peace and stop some of the pain. And yet, as many of you have likely already discovered, the beauty of the practice is that as we courageously allow ourselves to take a really good look at all the ways that we are caught up in our own greed and anger and delusion, What happens, so beautiful, is that we start to really recognize that we are not alone. We really start to see that. The more we practice, the more we start to recognize that our happiness involves letting go of this conditioned belief that the world revolves around us, and we start to naturally gain a wider perspective, which means we're starting to gain wisdom and to see the truth. One of my favorite quotes about this is from Pema Chodron, one of my favorite Buddhist nuns. And she writes, "Although it is embarrassing and painful, it is very healing to stop hiding from yourself. It is healing to know all the ways that you shut down, deny, close off, criticize, all your weird little ways. You can know all that with some sense of humor and kindness. By knowing yourself, you are coming to know humanness altogether." And it's really that last sentence that is really is so poignant and the point, which is, by knowing yourself, you are coming to know humanness altogether. And so the more we practice, the more we recognize that being human means that we're going to experience pain, and that we're going to suffer just like everyone else, and that we're also going to feel great joy. And we also start to recognize more experientially, directly for ourselves, the truth of the three characteristics of life. There is suffering. Everything, including ourselves, is impermanent, and that we are not alone. So those three, you might recognize as dukkha, suffering, right? Anatta, no self, and anicca, impermanence. Those three characteristics of life, we start to see them and experience them more directly for ourselves. And as we practice becoming more kind and compassionate with ourselves and all of our imperfections and humanness, what naturally, organically starts to happen is that our practice simply cannot sustain any kind of narcissism that believes it's all about me. It's not an intellectual thing, is it? It's like we just simply, as the more and more that we practice, I know this is true for me, we just really can't do it anymore. And very naturally, we also start to really care more about others and want to benefit all sentient beings everywhere and to actually be more active about this. This is because we know intimately for ourselves the truth of interconnection and can directly see that our happiness is tied to the happiness of all sentient beings, everyone, all creatures, the earth itself. We really get a more direct sense of that. And so, therefore, it is not at all selfish, not selfish to practice for ourselves. We need this to be able to understand our own humanness as a stepping stone to knowing humanness altogether. It is not selfish. We need that. As the famous Buddhist monk and scholar Thanissara Bhikkhu tells us, "One cannot wisely let go of one's sense of self until one has developed a wise sense of self." I'll read that again. "One cannot wisely let go of one's sense of self until one has developed a wise sense of self." So as we practice for ourselves, what happens is that our intention just kind of naturally starts to change into the fourth of these aspirations or intentions in the sutta, and almost organically transforms into one who is bent on the benefit both of themselves and on another. So we don't even have to strive for that last one. It organically comes out of our own practice. There's an old Zen saying that points to this, which is, "Returning from the mountaintop to the marketplace with bliss-bestowing hands." I love that. This final aspiration, being bent on the benefit of both self and other, is actually where the practice of dana, or generosity, comes in. And I want to mention that. So often we think of dana as the, you know, money we plunk into the donation or dana basket. But in the Buddhist practice, of course, this is so much more. It's one of the 10 paramis. Its dana is threaded throughout the whole practice because it is the practice of non-clinging. It is the dana is the practice of letting go and discovering the great joy of offering ourselves in service to others. Because we realize that by doing so, we are also offering this to ourselves because we are one another. You're not offering as a way of just being a benefit to another. It includes yourself. So I want to point out, of course, that this is not just a Buddhist idea or philosophy. This is a universal spiritual truth that our happiness depends on the happiness of others. And we can start to really recognize and see that the greatest joy truly is acknowledging our shared humanity and being of service to others to help ease suffering and increase our own sense of joy and connection. So just recently I was turned on to this word, Ubuntu, which is a humanist philosophy in South Africa, and it also points to this idea. And Desmond Tutu, who recently wrote the Book of Joy with the Dalai Lama, they wrote a book together. Does anybody have that book or read it? Yeah, I haven't read it yet. Is it awesome? Yeah. So Desmond Tutu wrote about this word. He said it's very difficult to render into a Western language. He said it speaks to the very essence of being human, he says. It is to say my humanity is caught up, is inextricably bound up in what is yours. We belong in a bundle of life. We say a person is a person through other persons. A person is a person through other persons. Martin Luther King Jr., who also spoke often about this sense of interconnection, wrote this while he was in jail in Birmingham. Said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. And another spiritual leader, Mother Teresa, once said this so simply. I love this one. So simple. She says, if we have no peace, it is because we have forgotten that we belong to each other. If we have no peace, it is because we have forgotten that we belong to each other. So given that the final aspiration or intention is one that almost all spiritual leaders, past and present, have told us brings us the most peace and joy, how do we do it? Right? All the spiritual leaders in the world told us this is it. So in the Buddhist practice, one of the best ways that we can set our intention is to constantly remind ourselves of it, to keep it in mind. And mindfulness, by the way, means to remember, remind, right? So at the Forest Refuge Center up in Massachusetts, where I go to practice, every morning at the 5 a.m. sit, after the 5 a.m. sit, we chant a traditional metta or loving kindness prayer, which is a prayer of intention to offer kindness to all beings, including ourselves. We also chant the five precepts, which are our intentions for good moral conduct to start our day. And then every evening we chant the traditional verses of blessings and aspirations, and I'm going to share those with you tonight. And this chant is also sometimes called the dedication of merit. And what this means is that we're honoring the fourth intention of the sutta. We're intending to share whatever benefit we've received from the practice with all beings everywhere. And the important part is without exception. We don't get to exclude some political leaders that we might be angry with. Gotta include them. And you know, before I share this with you, I want to point out again, this is a sharing of merit, which means that we ourselves are also benefiting from the merit of our practice. We aren't just giving it all away and depleting ourselves. This is so important. Here we might remember that the Buddha's teachings are actually called the middle way, and that which is in between self-deprivation and self-indulgence. And so often, You know, people hear the teachings of selflessness and think they have to give absolutely all of themselves to the detriment of themselves. But as we know, this kind of thinking really isn't helpful to anyone. You have to include yourself in that. So, you know, sometimes this practice includes maybe taking a step back from the giving in order to fill your own well. And to quote Satyavani again, she says, "If we find ourselves at our limits, it may be best to pull our attention back from those we're in the process of quote-unquote saving and save ourselves instead. Strengthening our own relationship with the Dhamma will always lead to good things. As we fill up with love, it will spill out and soak everyone around us." So before I offer this chant to you, I want to point out that its message is so similar to that of other spiritual traditions. When I was young, my dear little Italian grandmother, who I adored, taught me the prayer of St. Francis, which I love. And I think it's so similar to the Buddhist dedication of merit. And some of you may know this by heart. "Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. It is in dying that we are born again to eternal life." So in the Buddhist practice, there are infinite chants to dedicate the merit. And some of them are short and some of them are long. What I'd like to suggest is that you consider finding a phrase or a chant or an intention maybe that works for you, short or long, and incorporate it into your sitting practice, either before or after. I like to say the metta prayer after and the intention to start. Okay. And so, for instance, you might, before you begin your practice, you might bring your hand to your heart or maybe a prayer position or two hands on the heart, and just recite a prayer of intention, either silently or out loud. And this in itself is a kind of intention, isn't it? And I really encourage you to notice the difference in your practice and how it might change from this. Just this one simple new thing into your practice, if you don't have it already. The Zen master Shinzo Ito tells us, "Positive transformation is usually incremental. Small efforts, if concrete, will pile up and bring about big personal and even social change." Change doesn't start out there. It starts right here, right? So a very simple chant of aspiration that you might use from the Theravadin tradition is very simple. "May all beings always live happily, free from animosity. May all share in the blessings springing from the good that I have done." These are big aspirations. It's saying all beings. That's pretty big. And it just means that's your intention. Doesn't mean that's going to happen. But have that, it's asking you to have that big of an intention. Not may some beings live happily. The ones I kind of like, not those other ones. Right? From the Tibetan tradition, there's a short but very ambitious dedication attributed to Nagarjuna. "By this merit, may all obtain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings." Could go for it, right? And so I'm going to end tonight with passing out these so you can have them, blessings and aspirations. So, Kathy, you want to split them up? Susie, you want to help? So I recognize that this is extremely Buddhist. And take it or leave it, I just want you to listen to it. So I wanted to pass it out so you can hear it. And also, just for those of you who might be inspired by it, just to have it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to chant it first so you can hear the rhythm of the chant. And then those of you who would like to can join me. But before I do, I want you to notice here that just like these other ones that I've mentioned, it includes all sentient beings. And I want you to notice how hard some of these things are. That's the practice. It's very similar to the Metta prayer when we send it out to all beings everywhere without exception. Same idea. Because the heart's like, well, not that person. Or not that. I don't want to be, you know. Notice it. And remember, that's your practice. You don't have to. But you can hold the pain of not wanting to offer that and give kindness to that. Okay. So I'm going to attempt to start this. May the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world. May the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death. May those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble guide. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. So those of you who'd like to try this on with me, do this one more time. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble guide. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. So I'm going to invite you, everybody, now just to go ahead and close the eyes. Set the piece of paper down if you'd like. Maybe one hand on the heart or both hand on the heart. Maybe one hand on the belly. Just breathe into the fingers. And just for a moment, connect with your intention for practice. Your own connection. Your own intention for practice. And go right to the heart. And ask yourself that question for a moment. Who am I practicing for? I'm going to invite you this week just to consider that question and keep continuing to question it, see what arises. And to end, I'll just read from the Nagarjuna intention. Just hear it and see what comes up. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings.
I hope you enjoyed this talk. These talks are always offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to them. And your support or dana also makes a big difference. Dana is the ancient Pali word for spontaneous generosity of heart. If you feel inspired to support these talks by offering dana, you can do so by visiting my website at www.mindfulvalley.com. Thank you so much.